This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of February 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 4th of February 2016, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Silver Hill fiasco, new threats loom. Trial of 20 mile per hour zones ending, and Tory budget cuts lead to rise in council tax. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Silver Hill fiasco, new threats loom. Winchester civic chiefs face the threat of two legal challenges after walking away from the developer of Silver Hill. Property giant TH Real Estate, henceforward referred to as THRE, is set to be dropped from the £150 million regeneration for good on Wednesday after the City Council resoundingly voted to end the contract. Civic leaders are planning immediate work in parts of the area before rebooting a comprehensive development over the next 3 to 5 years. But they could face legal action from THRE, as well as a fresh battle with campaigners over a move to protect the scheme's 2009 planning permission. Rebel councillor Kim Gottlieb has threatened a second court challenge if the council nods through THRE's preparation for the project. At Planning Committee today, fellow critic councillor Rose Burns will describe pre-construction work as, quote, woefully inadequate, unquote, and raise fears that the council will sell the scheme to another developer rather than starting from scratch. The move to drop THRE with immediate effect was backed by all but one councillor, Conservative Ian Tate, at a meeting last Thursday. It is expected to be rubber-stamped by Cabinet on Wednesday, and the developer will not have a grace period as previously thought. My belief is that enough is enough, Council Chief Stephen Godfrey told the meeting, reiterating his first preference to build the original scheme as soon as possible. We will look to make the best use of that land to make it as smart and habitable and usable as best we can, but it will take investment to do that, he said. Lib Dem group leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, it's time to bring an end to this whole sorry saga, which has been so dogged by delay and uncertainty. Now we know there will be no affordable housing and no proper bus facilities, there should be no deal. It comes after Conservative leaders rejected THRE's plea for more time. The developer, which he reversed on a pledge to start work by Christmas, has suggested that ditching the contract could spark a legal challenge. In the next few months, the council wants to rebuild part of the crumbling Friarsgate car park, restore the empty Coitbury House, and improve King's Walk shopping arcade. After the meeting, Councillor Godfrey stood by past decisions to stick with the scheme, but told the Chronicle that THRE's approach at times made him, quote, uncomfortable, end quote, particularly in 2014 when the firm was trying to change the level of affordable housing. They were promising us one deal in the evening, which was withdrawn in the morning, he said. THRE has offered no comment since the decision, despite requests from the Chronicle. But in a letter to the council published last week, fund manager David Pearce said it would be unfair to take preemptive action before the developer has the chance to change its proposals. Cabinet will decide at a special meeting on February the 18th whether the council holds on to land in Silver Hill bought in 2014. The next stages for the scheme and the development of St Clement's Doctor's Surgery will be considered on March the 24th. Meanwhile, an independent review by Solicitor Claire Lloyd-Jones, expected to be critical, had not been made public before the Chronicle went to press yesterday.
Trial of 20 miles per hour zones ending. The future of a dozen schemes which slow drivers across Hampshire, including one in Winchester, is to be decided soon. Roads bosses are preparing to decide whether 20 miles per hour speed limits will stay in place in 12 towns and villages. Several Hampshire towns, villages and streets have been taking part in a trial of lower speed limits run by Hampshire County Council. Lower speed limits have been put in place in Stanmore in Winchester, Medstead near Alsford, Chilbolton near Stockbridge, Sherburg Road in Eastleigh and in Hythe, Andover, Whitchurch, Dummer near Basingstoke and Rushmore and Hart near Farnborough. Mitchell Dever near Winchester is also due to have its speeds reduced. But these pilots, which were put in place between 2013 and 2015 after consultations with residents, are coming to an end, and this summer the County Council will decide whether they're here to stay. The Council's Roads Chief, Councillor Sean Woodward, said they would look at whether the number of road casualties have been reduced, whilst also consulting residents again on whether they felt the scheme had made a difference. If the majority proved to be a success, more 20 miles per hour areas could be rolled out across Hampshire to combat speeding in accident black spots. Councillor Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "These schemes are currently planned to be assessed in 2016 to see what benefits lower speed limits give to local residents. The results of this assessment will play a part in the future County Council policy for 20 miles per hour speed limits." 20 miles per hour speed limits aren't new. They've been used for many years, and the County Council decided to do a trial of a dozen or so schemes to see if they were a good thing to do and whether they have an impact. Councillor Woodward added, "The general feeling is they are a good thing, but of course the only way to know for sure is to do a trial. What we decided to do was put the schemes in place, pilot them for at least a year, then have another consultation." The schemes came after Portsmouth became the first place in the UK to have a city-wide 20 miles per hour speed limit in residential streets in 2007 and 2008. Despite mixed reviews from residents, statistics show about a 20% reduction in road accidents and a 1.3 miles per hour drop in speeds from an average of 19.8 miles per hour to 18.5 miles per hour.
Tory budget cuts lead to rise in council tax. People in Hampshire are set for a council tax rise of almost 4% after the County Council was hit by a worse-than-expected grant cut. Leaders at the Conservative-led authority were left reeling after being told they would be £29 million worse off in 2016-17 than previously expected, meaning council tax is likely to go up for the first time in 6 years. The government cut to their grant means a council tax rise of 1.99% and another 2% increase as part of the social care precept announced by Chancellor George Osborne last year to fund the rising cost of social care now being proposed. The increase will raise an extra £20 million in revenue, but civic chiefs will have to dip into £54.5 million from reserves to meet a gap of £80 million. A total of 218 jobs could be axed as part of the final budget proposals being considered by the Council's Cabinet tomorrow. Council leader Roy Perry said, while a proposed increase of 3.99% would contribute towards making up some of the lost grant and social care costs next year, we would still need to use £55 million of reserve to plug the remaining gap, leaving us with nothing for future years. We had always anticipated using some reserves to balance the budget next year to give us time to reshape and modernise our business, but we had not expected to need to use so much, especially when proposing to put up council tax. We are facing the most challenging period of the prolonged national austerity measures. In Hampshire, this means having to deliver savings of £98 million by April 2017, rising to a further £140 million of savings by 2019-20. The council tax rise, if approved, would mean residents in Band D properties having to pay an extra £41.40 in 2016-17. Also to be considered at the meeting will be the £563 million capital budget for school buildings to create 11,000 new places, repairing roads and transport schemes, and £1 million on IT. The new UKIP group leader at the council, Chris Wood, said, clearly the government does not trust councils to deliver services for a reasonable price. Otherwise, they wouldn't feel the need to continually slash the budget.
That concludes the headline stories, and we now continue with the death announcements. Bursmans. Joan Flora Bursman, née Saunders, on the 26th of January, aged 87. Bull, Anne Bull, on the 26th of January, aged 77. Cleverly, Ronald, known as Frank Cleverly, on the 23rd of January, aged 94. Hobbs, June Rosemary Hobbs, née Moa, on the 30th of January, aged 82. Miller, Tony, known as Dusty Miller, on the 23rd of January, at Winchester Hospital, aged 81. Parrot, Olive Rose Parrot, at Tudor Lodge Nursing Home, on the 24th of January, aged 92. Pierce, Julie Ann Pierce, on the 26th of January, aged 57. Staples, Norman Staples, on the 22nd of January. And Vokes, Joan Vokes, formerly Smith, on the 28th of January, aged 81. And next, we have Christian comment.
And this week, it is written by the Reverend Graham Bowkett, the area dean of Alresford, and he entitles it Jesus, the Epitome of Greatness. A little while ago, I gave a sermon in which I made the point that to have a Christian faith means that you have to have a Christian ethic. And to have a Christian ethic, one needs Christian faith. You can't have one without the other and call it Christian. You can have an ethic and a faith, but if you are a Christian, you must have both, and they must be rooted in the love of God and the love of neighbour. My wife, who heard the sermon, said after the service that she found my sermon rather amusing, especially the bit where I made the point about Christian faith and Christian ethics. When I inquired why this was so, she told me that although she didn't question my faith, I often get thoroughly annoyed when driving, have little sympathy when people are being blatantly stupid. I know that's an arbitrary judgment. I am impatient, and that I often get agitated if I feel I'm being wronged. Actually, I have abridged this list as it was rather longer. It was interesting, though, because she made a very valid point about perceptions, and in particular, perceptions of the Christian faith. I made the point to my lovely wife that Jesus wasn't always that worried about being thought of as nice or good. In Luke 18, just after Jesus blesses the children, the rich ruler addresses Jesus and asks, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus answered with the question, "Why do you call me good?" pointing out that no one is good except God alone. I recounted Jesus' word to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan," which is a bit harsh. Jesus' anger in the temple, in fact, Jesus invading the temple and going on a righteous riot against the mercenary moneymakers in the temple yard. Read Matthew 23. The chapter is railed entirely at the Pharisees and their followers. Jesus curses them. No dialogue or niceties, only hostility and condemnation. Jesus confronted religious error robustly and without theological pacifism. He challenged evil, greed, and self-importance, preaching a gospel of love, self-sacrifice, charity, and unselfishness. But to think him a pushover is an error. Jesus preached an exclusive gospel which often people find rough, because theologians, worshippers, and liberal academics alike prefer a passive Jesus. This couldn't be further from the truth. Our faith is not passive, dogmatic, esoteric, or detached. It is a vibrant, demanding, and a declaration against those who would do harm and do evil. The Christian gospel is no shrinking violet. It has been said even the kindest shepherd must throw stones at the wolves who come in sheep's clothing. Don't throw stones, but do not be passive either. Jesus Christ is the epitome of greatness. There is not a person alive that doesn't need to hear this story, this great gospel. It is amazing. Love God and love your neighbour. Truly a transforming gospel. The Reverend Graham Barkett, rector of Upper Itch and Benefice and the area dean of Alsford.
Now we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we start with the first letter,
which is from Jane Dunster, and it's entitled College Issues. "Sir, your readers will be aware of the unease surrounding the proposed siting of Peter Simmons College's new art centre. They may be interested to consider what being a neighbour of the college involves. In May 2006, a young Peter Simmons student came round the corner and drove her car into mine whilst it was parked outside my house. The impact forced my car up onto the pavement, no mean feat as it was a heavy old car, and broke its axle, righting the car off completely. I brought the girl, unhurt but clearly shaken, into my house and gave her sweetened tea and looked after her until her father arrived. She'd been coming out of an A-level exam and was on her way home to somewhere beyond Alton. I felt nothing but concern for this young girl and didn't even write to the college about this incident at the time. More recently, and much more seriously, it was the neighbours in Hatherley Road who tended to the poor boy who impaled himself on the railings in the middle of the night. It was the neighbours who insisted that the principal have the spikes removed from these railings, as youths still regularly climb over when the gate is locked. Jane Dunster, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester."
On a similar subject about Peter Simmons College, this is from Karen Barrett, headed "Public Meeting May Address Issues." Sir, as a former member of the City Council's Planning Committee, I never ceased to be amazed at the regularity with which large institutions or developers alienate the community by failing to consult at an early stage. I do not know all the details of the latest Arts Centre anger, that's Chronicle January 28th, but it seems clear from your report that Peter Simmons has managed to antagonise a large number of residents who are normally supportive. It really is unacceptable that contact with the principal and vice principal is proving so difficult, if indeed that is the case. The main bone of contention seems to be the proposed location of the Arts Centre on the edge of the site. Maybe Peter Simmons College should organise a public meeting where some of the residents' concerns could be discussed and reassurances given. That is from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
Andrew Adams writes about wasting money. Sir, the twin issues of Station Approach and Silver Hill provided an interesting contrast in the Chronicle edition of January the 21st. The comments by Paul Bulkley of Snug Architects are quite extraordinary. While most of us are lucky enough to have a few days off at Christmas, we are not so full of turkey and champagne that we cannot get back to work in short order, and indeed many work throughout the period in our vital services. It is a shame that such a flimsy excuse is offered for not participating in the design competition on Station Approach, and we can only hope that Design Engine can offer a strong local proposal to reinvigorate the area. Whatever the outcome, however, we simply cannot allow the same mistakes to happen with Station Approach as have with Silver Hill. The new leisure centre and other schemes, time and again local people, rightly or wrongly, feel that their views have been dismissed. And as the people of Winchester are on the whole an engaged and committed bunch, that means challenges and delays at every level, wasting much time and public money along the way. Our council should be responsive to us. We urgently need a proper strategy for consultation on major schemes, consulted on, of course, so that all of us can feel that our views are genuinely considered, and even if we do not get everything we want, that the wishes of the people of Winchester are foremost in shaping the future of our city. The current City Council have failed abjectly in this, unable even to get agreement from their own Tory councillors, never mind the public at large. We could no longer see vital schemes like Silver Hill mired in challenge for years and going nowhere. Something has to change, and quickly, if we are to build the modern, vibrant Winchester we all want to see. Andrew Adams, Harvest Court, Winchester.
This letter, which is from Andy Smale, Winchester Action on Climate Change, is entitled Save on Energy. Sir, I am the Home Energy Advisor for Winchester Action on Climate Change, helping to tackle fuel poverty across Winchester. Regarding your article, Energy Schemes Go Under Review, Chronicle, January the 21st. I would welcome the help of readers in reaching out to vulnerable members of our society. WINAC, that is Winchester Action on Climate Change, supports workers and volunteers who visit vulnerable people, advising them what can be done and how they can help. We also provide support directly to all households across Winchester District, although our funding is to help people in fuel poverty and social housing. Our partner, the Environment Centre, helps homeowners and private tenants across Hampshire. This kind of service can take a long time to become established, and I am hopeful that continued financial support will eventually enable us to build more productive and cooperative alliances across the district. We can visit householders in their homes, helping with issues such as changing to cheaper energy tariffs, demonstrating how to use your heating system effectively, and tackling damp and condensation problems. For those who cannot afford to pay, we carry out simple improvements free of charge, including changing old light bulbs to the latest efficient LEDs, fitting draft proofing and pipe insulation. Our support also includes comprehensive energy awareness training and casework support for frontline workers who themselves help vulnerable people. Anyone in Winchester District can contact us for impartial help with switching to cheaper energy and making their home warmer. Likewise, any local charity or community group can get in touch to organise a free training session or simply an informative talk. Ring 01962 217 844. I'll read that again. 01962 217 844. And that's from Andy Smale, Winchester Action on Climate Change, Sparkford Road, Winchester.
Peter Hargreaves writes, Rotten Borough. Sir, where has our pride gone? Do we feel no shame that our beloved city is now regularly featured in the Rotten Boroughs section of the investigative Private Eye magazine? Is there no concern among Winchester's establishment that the proud and honourable name of this great city is being continually dragged through the mud and exposed shamefully to the nation for its shocking inadequacies in being unable to put together a sound business contract for the proposed Silver Hill development? Although I've been severely critical of the City Council, I have to express some sympathy with the councillors who have had to resign their positions while the highly paid officials responsible for supporting them are still in their jobs. The decision to restart Silver Hill project from scratch is the right one, but shouldn't it be with a new team of council officers who could be relied on to keep our elected councillors on the right track? Surely before any more contracts are signed, shouldn't there be a thoroughly independent root and branch investigation into how the council officers allowed council decisions to devolve into total chaos? And why a contract for £12 million for the Cheswell Street extra care development was allowed to suddenly increase by £2.4 million, that's 21%, with little public explanation? When is a contract not a contract? That's from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And here's something nice to read from Vicky Dunlop. Praise for the National Health Service. Sir, I would like to give my sincere thanks to all the doctors, nurses and other medical staff in A&E and the Twyford Ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for their amazing care during my stay on the January 18th and 19th following a transient ischemic attack. I am a 55-year-old active female and I certainly wasn't expecting that to happen during a game of golf. The NHS continues to get such negative praise, but for me, I only have the highest praise. Thank you. Mm. Vicky Dunlop, High Street, Twyford. And there is a little extra here by the editor saying, send letters for publication no longer than 350 words to letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk.
Well, this next letter is much shorter than 300 words, but it does say something of impact. It's by Stuart Challoner, and it's entitled Cathedral Shame. Sir, I have been away for a couple of months and may have missed developments, but assume that the Winchester Cathedral debate has died down, if not gone away. I wonder how much the sheds for trinkets and trash made this year. I notice the appalling charges for entry are still displayed, so the Free and Open God's House lobby has been defeated by the commercial Let's Screw the Punters management side. Last week I visited friends in Gloucester, and we visited that very pleasant city after a gap of some years. Of course, we gravitated to the fine cathedral. Free, open, welcoming. No horrible turnstiles or challenge at the door. A lovely experience, and the tea and scones in the tea room. What a contrast. How shameful for Winchester. That's from Stuart Challoner, Alsford Road, Alvington, Alsford.
Geoffrey Bernand writes, set record straight. Sir, reading T.I. Martin's letter to you, Chronicle January the 21st, I was somewhat concerned to notice that it contained a number of inaccuracies relating to Winchester Housing Trust, that's WHT, and its activities. As chairman of the Trust, I hope you will allow me to put the record straight. It is important that rural housing remains affordable in perpetuity and is offered to those with connection to the parish. Shared ownership residents are allowed to buy part of their homes, but not 100%, in order to preserve the stock of affordable houses. The vast majority of their WHT's income, that was in quotes, does not go towards administering themselves. In fact, only 20% of income goes towards employee costs, and the board of seven directors is unpaid. The highest expenditure of the trust is the maintenance of our existing homes. Two- and three-bedroom houses cannot be bought on the open market at less than the cost of affordable homes in Mitchellever, as can be easily established. Based on two-bedroom properties available today through Winchester City Council, the WHT two-bedroom average rent is 13% higher than Winchester City Council, not 30%. I can strongly recommend the Trust's website, that's www.winchesterhousingtrust.co.uk, which describes an accurate description of the Trust and what we do. And that was from Geoffrey Bernand, Chairman, Winchester Housing Trust Limited, Winchester Street, Whitchurch.
Roger Malyn, or I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, spelled M-A-L-Y-N, writes on a clever approach. Sir, Councillor Twelvetree's objections to the devotion of Andover Road seems rather single-minded to me. I moved to Winchester 3 years ago and then formed the opinion that the diversion was implemented to pacify the residents of Andover Road by diverting traffic away from them. Irrespective of where the road runs, it will not remove the traffic, but to think it will go through the Hairstocker estate is false. Other rat runs are far more attractive, as it appears to me that much of the through traffic is off the A34, avoiding lengthy delays at Junction 9 on the M3 by heading for Junction 11 via Chilbolton Avenue. The only solution to this problem is a radical one. The diversion of the A34 from Three Maids Hill to the west of Winchester to join the M3 in the vicinity of Otterbourne. Not only would it remove the congestion at Winnell, but access from Barton Farm onto the existing carriageway would relieve traffic on the Andover Road, there now being an easier route to the east of the city. Junctions on the new road with the Andover, Stockbridge and Romsey roads would give an easier route across the north and west of the city, removing the heavy rush hour traffic flows along Chilbolton Avenue and Romsey Road. The new road could build sympathetically with as little impact as possible on the surrounding country and would also form the boundary for Winchester's westerly development. I moved here from Cardiff, where roads were planned for years ahead, and when council started to think big about its traffic problems and not use the sticky plaster approach. I appreciate it is in my backyard, but you can't have everything. Let's try and keep the city for people, not cars, and make it a pleasant place to develop and live. There we are, Councillor Twelvetrees. Something proper for you to get your teeth into. Roger Malyn, Goringfield, Winchester.
Next, we have the items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
And so this first one is from 200 years ago, February the 5th, 1816, and the title is Bonaparte Guarded. The following is an extract from a letter received from off St. Helena. At present, we are cruising off St. Helena to prevent as much as possible all communication with that island, on account of our state prisoner. Bonaparte is at present most narrowly watched, and on parole is not to go beyond the limits of the little garden surrounding the cottage he inhabits. He has always about his person an officer and at least two or three sergeants. Notwithstanding all this, he is never heard to complain, but seems perfectly calm and resigned to his fate.
100 years ago was February the 5th, 1916. The heading is New Military Theatre. Messrs J and J Simpkins, the proprietors of the Theatre Royal Winchester, have undertaken a spirited enterprise and this week have opened a new garrison theatre on Magdalen Hill. The building has been erected with the approval of the military authorities, and indeed they first approached Mrs. Simpkins upon the matter, thinking that something of the kind would meet much felt need on the part of the troops. Mrs. Simpkins were fortunate in acquiring a piece of land which is in a central situation between the three camps, Magdalen Hill, Avingdon and Winnell Down.
50 years ago, February the 5th, 1966, Tesco fears dismissed. One of Winchester's smaller shopkeepers said at the planning appeal on Wednesday that there was nothing to fear if the Tesco supermarket chain built a store in the city. Tesco's will not affect our trade, he said. I have no hesitation in trading next door to any supermarket. It's a matter of competition. The appeal followed the refusal of the Winchester City Council to permit Tesco Stores Limited to erect a supermarket, including stockroom and first floor storage, to front Upper Book Street, with rear access from Parchment Street. The ground for refusal given by the council was that the proposals did not provide satisfactory accommodation within the site for the parking of vehicles by staff or customers, or for the loading and unloading of vehicles.
25 years ago, February the 1st, 1991, M3 route condemned. Environmentalist Jonathan Porritt has condemned as sacrilegious the government's decision to route the Winchester link of the M3 in a deep cutting through the Twyford Down conservation area. He said, "It is a trespass on the sacred trust that we have as the current generation to pass on in as good a condition. This decision is in defiance of that trust as far as environment and culture are concerned." The former director of Friends of the Earth was addressing last week's inaugural meeting of the Twyford Down Association, of which he is vice president.
We now have the editorial from the Hampshire Chronicle, which will then be followed by First Person.
Thank you. And the heading is Time to End the Silver Hill Fiasco. If anyone thinks that peace has broken out over Silver Hill with the likely departure of London developers THRE, then they will probably be disappointed. It is impossible to say how this fiasco, because that is what it is, will go from here. Anyone who thinks they know what will happen is lying. The permutations of legal action and counteraction, exits stage left and entrances stage right, is like a Brian Ricks farce, and one that will be remembered for decades. Some opponents of the scheme believe that the collapse of the THRE plan opens the way for a new ivy-clad scheme with houses and gardens and Morris men in the square rather than seven-storey blocks. But council leader Stephen Godfrey told this newspaper this week that the scheme may have to be even taller because of the increased cost caused by the delays. It is even conceivable that the THRE and the City Council have been playing a monumental game of poker and will get back together again. This newspaper has for many years supported with reservations Silver Hill as a good scheme, if not the perfect one. As the old saying goes, the best is the enemy of the good. The Increasingly, but the only sensible option is to echo the words of those 1980 pop philosophers, orange juice. Rip it up and start again.
Joanna Lewis entitles her article, Silver Hills, Silver Lining, question. How should we react to Winchester City Council's vote last week to terminate the Silver Hill contract with the real estate property giant once called Henderson and now known as THRE? Whoops of delight quickly echoed forth from social media sites. For members of the public who have opposed the scheme for so long and with such passion, the prospect of a regeneration scheme fit for the 21st century and beyond unleashed a tsunami of relief. One long-standing resident wrote hopefully to a future Silver Hill development for all with, quote, beauty, grace, history and heritage. Let's build something of which we can all be proud, end of quote. Reactions from Winchester Deserves Better campaigners have been muted. There's been no gloating and certainly no foot off the campaign gas. That's because the current situation is like the penultimate scene in a classic Western movie. John Wayne has just shot down the baddie with greasy hair and bad skin and is busy kissing the girl he's just untied, so we think it's all over. But suddenly, a hand reaches towards the pistol on the floor and the first big concern is that last week's decision by councillors may well not result in a parting of the ways with THRE and its cheap and outdated retail model for the town centre. Yes, councillors finally voted to terminate the contract after the company has stalled on its start date. True, there is now only a short window available to THRE to get his act together. And yes, the council can legally make compulsory purchase orders on key sites within the scheme up to the end of March. However, THRE may try anything to keep its ailing scheme in play, despite already trying to sell it on. It's been used to such submissive behaviour from the council, it's become acculturated to having its own way. Gosh, that's a new word. Crying foul for having invested millions in the project design was simply not wash. For example, the engineering and archaeological surveys have been woeful, despite the rich and complex underground remains and waterways. The overall design looks like it emerged from a team visit to Lego World, and no scale model of the site was produced for public viewing. The second big worry is that the council is still wedded to the outdated vision for Silver Hill in the 2009 scheme as an alternative. Where to start? Perhaps by standing outside River Island on the Hind Street, underneath the sign that reads, Closing Down on Saturday. As one industry insider said to me, we're only halfway through the impact of the internet retail revolution. So, to support the city centre and High Street, we need to build on Winchester's unique and historic market town feel and not aspire to be an upmarket Bracknell with gloomy seven-storey dark brick shopping centres. Finally, the 20-year Silver Hill debacle suggests an institutional culture and in-house expertise struggling to cope with the complexity of large-scale development and the need to preserve the unique essence and beauty of the city. As last week's Chronicle leader put it, it will take the highest skill to juggle competing demands whilst preserving what makes Winchester special. From what we have witnessed, we have two hopes of achieving this. Bob Hope and no hope. We have seen senior council executives allegedly withholding key information from councillors, so they end up making bad decisions. It's been left to the public and a few brave councillors to form any kind of opposition and to scrutinise plans. and relationships between consultants, developers, and council officers appears far too cosy. If the independent report by Miss Claire Lloyd-Jones is judged to be remotely critical of council governance, then those at the top of this ugly pile of judicial reviews, criticism, and public loss of confidence should do the decent thing. Then the clouds hanging over the hill may have a silver lining.
Few items of what's on. On Wednesday the 10th of February at 10:30 in Hyde Parish Hall, there is the Hyde Coffee Morning with refreshments, raffle and sales table. On Saturday the 27th of February at 7 p.m. in the Cathedral, there is the Cathedral Group Choir Festival for 2016. And tickets are available for that at priced at £10, and you should contact the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. At the Salvation Army Hall in Parchment Street every Friday, there is a coffee morning from 9 till 11 with stalls, clothes and refreshments. All are welcome. And similarly, also at the Salvation Army Hall in Parchment Street every Tuesday, there is a lunch club with speakers starting at 10:30 and the cost is £2.50, which includes lunch. And again, everyone is welcome to that. And if you're interested in going to more information about the events at the Salvation Army Hall, particularly the lunch club, you should contact Linda Ball on 01962 856279. That's Linda Ball on 01962 856279. And finally, tickets are now on sale for an event at the Theatre Royal on Friday the 18th of March. This is a charity concert in aid of Click Sargent Children's Cancer Trust and the Alzheimer's Society. There will be music, laughter and non-stop nostalgia with music from the 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s. So that's Friday 18th of March at the Theatre Royal. Tickets cost £16 and the telephone number for the Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 5th of February, the sun rose at 20 to 8 in the morning and will be setting at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And Wednesday of next week, sunrise will be at 7:30 in the morning and sunset will be at 10 past 5 in the afternoon. And if you know and someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And there's a plastic, there's a laminated card with this information inside each and wallet should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now continue with items of general news interest. And the first three articles that we read, I'm afraid, inevitably are the continuation of the Silver Hill story. There's a general news item, and then there are comments from the leader of the council and also from Councillor Kim Gottlieb.
And this first one is entitled Cities Fight to Start Again. The walls in Silver Hill tell their own story. Shabby and soiled, these buildings are a drag on Winchester's grand old city centre. This was obvious to councillors 20 years ago as they first tabled plans to rebuild the quarter. Now, as a second developer falls by the wayside, Winchester City Council is looking to pick up the pieces. Civic leaders are planning to develop over the next 3 to 5 years with an immediate facelift for parts of the site. In the next few months, they want to revamp key buildings, starting with Friarsgate Car Park. Closed for nearly a year and at risk of collapse, the 1970s car stack could be partly rebuilt with around 20 new spaces opened. King's Walk and the M.T. Coybury House Health Centre would be restored in 2016. The council is also looking to redevelop St Clement's Surgery, but will have to convince doctors to sell the building. Writing in this week's Chronicle, Councillor Godfrey has ruled out scaling down buildings and suggests they may need to be even taller to cover increased land values. Compulsory purchase powers, allowing the council to buy the remaining land, expire in March. The possibility has been raised of a voluntary deal between the council and its fellow major landowners, THRE and Stagecoach. More options will be presented to Cabinet on March the 29th. However, the council faces legal threats on two fronts, from its partner, THRE, and from Kim Gottlieb, the rebel Conservative councillor who took his own administration to court. Councillor Gottlieb has threatened another offensive if the council implements the scheme's planning permission, which expires on Tuesday. He fears that the council could approve planning conditions itself and make a symbolic start to work by Tuesday, allowing them to start the 2009 plans alive. I beg your pardon, to keep the 2009 plans alive and sell them to another developer. Councillor Rose Burns, a Gottlieb ally, will argue at Planning Committee today that preparation on archaeology, sewage and other issues has been woefully inadequate. As for THRE, its chances of saving the scheme before the decision to terminate is made official grow smaller by the day, and the council does not expect the remaining planning conditions to be fulfilled before Cabinet meets on Wednesday. THRE boss Mike Sales has raised the prospect of a legal challenge on the grounds that the council, which is obliged to act in good faith, did not give them the time to deliver more changes. It is understood Thursday's meeting was told in closed session that the council would have an extremely strong case. TH Real Estate has not provided comment since the decision last Thursday. The joker in the pack is Claire Lloyd-Jones's independent review, which was still not published at the time of going to press. She is not expected to comment on the scheme's future, but her analysis of Silver Hill up to early 2015 could highlight pitfalls or recommend changes to how the council does business. One of the key factors for her investigation, whether councillors sought and implemented appropriate legal advice, came to the fore again last week as lawyers apologised for failing to spot a change to the contract. It emerged that a clause giving THRE 20 working days to put the scheme through after the decision to terminate was deleted in 2010. Councillor advisor Leslie Ann Avis, partner at Berwyn Leighton Paisner, apologised for the mistake but said it was, quote, impossible to keep on top of all the variations, unquote, to the deal. As Simon Eden, council chief executive, told the Chronicle at Thursday's meeting, nothing surprises me about Silver Hill anymore.
And talking of council leader Stephen Godfrey, this is his statement about Silver Hill, which is headed, Where Do We Go Now? Termination of our development agreement would mean that Winchester is facing several more years before the regeneration begins. In my professional life, I try to resolve complex problems for large organisations. I have learnt that you must deal with the problem in front of you and not worry about how you got there. The problem is that the area is badly run down. Many visitors arriving by bus or car will see this shabby area right in the middle of the city. We must ensure that Winchester is attractive to visitors and residents. What is needed in Silver Hill? A GP surgery? Better access by bus and car? More homes for that local people can afford? Decent shops? More attractive public areas? The council will consult residents, businesses and others before bringing forward proposals that meet these needs. Just to cover the cost of purchasing the land, valued at £6 million per acre, 350 flats might have to be built, hard to deliver, in structures of less than five stories. The cost of planning contributions will need other enabling development, probably leading to further increases in the bulk of the buildings. Any suggestion that Silver Hill can be developed with only low-level structures is wrong. But a new scheme must provide exciting facilities in an attractive package. The design quality will need to be excellent. The right proposals will take time to emerge, so little can be decided this year. Meanwhile, the council will tidy up the area and protect those services and facilities that need to be safeguarded, costing millions of pounds that had not been planned for. Changing course is expensive, but we must deal with the problems in front of us.
And Kim Gottlieb continues by arguing that Silver Hill still presents a great opportunity. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of him looking relaxed and confident. The Chronicle asks, what next? But the Henderson threat is not yet over. They will try every trick and test every loophole in the time left to rescue their position. The council, too, seems determined to rescue the dreadful 2009 proposal. What I'd like to see next is the council accepting that it got it wrong. It could try saying sorry for acting unlawfully and for wasting hundreds of thousands of taxpayer pounds. The year since the judicial review has been a sorry chapter for the council, and much of its problem was a reluctance to learn any lessons. It doesn't help not having the expertise, internally and externally, to cope with complex urban regeneration projects, and this needs big change. The credit for pressing for change in the council's approach belongs to individuals in all three political parties. But just now, it would be hypocritical for any one party to assume the moral high ground with an eye on the council election in May. The public, too, similarly from the widest possible political spectrum, deserve enormous credit. Despite the lost time, the site remains a magnificent opportunity to create something exciting and distinctive that would enhance the city's reputation and bolster its economy whilst respecting its heritage. Foremost, we need to understand and to reveal the archaeology beneath the site. Drawing upon the talent that already exists here, any new scheme should be designed around the archaeology, and then only under the framework of a master plan for the whole area to include the Middlebrook Street car park and the Brook Centre. What next holds much promise. Whether the council delivers, we'll just have to wait and see.
Work set to start on substation. First the pain, but then the gain. Contractors will start work next week on building a new electricity substation in Winchester city centre. The work will disrupt motorists on Jury Street, but the end result should reduce power cuts, says Scottish and Southern Electric. Work will be done overnight from 7pm to 5am, 6 days a week, starting on Tuesday, February the 8th, and is expected to last 2 months. During the work, Jury Street will be closed to traffic, but pedestrian access will be maintained. The work is in two phases. The first, lasting 3 weeks, will see teams laying new underground cable from Tower Street down Jury Street towards St Peter's Church. The second phase will begin on the opposite side of Jury Street outside St Peter's, heading towards the old jailhouse, and take about 5 weeks. Soundproof barriers will reduce noise pollution, said a letter to local residents. Winchester and Chandlesford MP Steve Brine, who has taken an interest in local power supply, said, "Concerns around power supply in this part of town have plagued businesses for many years. So I've been clear with SSE we need robust action and investment to safeguard the supply. It's taken a while, and there will be some real disruption while the work is carried out, but this is welcome and will make a tangible difference."
Call for action on rank building spot. Concerns about the state of a Winchester beauty spot were raised at a meeting of the town forum. St Faith's Meadow, next to the Hospital of St Cross, was leased to Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust in 2012. The meadow, part of the River Itchen site of special scientific interest, has been declining in recent years. Natural England allocated £53,800 for tree removal, fencing, restoration of the ditches to improve habitats and to improve water flow and channels and clearing the invasive scrub. Concerned resident Mike Gibbons from St Cross, however, believes more work should be done and is concerned that the money has not been managed effectively. He told Winchester Town Forum the site is very important and locally protected. Unfortunately, it has been neglected. Therefore, it needs some remedial work and some money put in. This has been going on since 2005 when it was flagged up as being in declining condition. He added, "There is no movement of water," described areas of it as blocked, and questioned whether the money allocated by Natural England had been spent properly. After the meeting, Mr. Gibbons told the Chronicle, "I want, at the earliest opportunity, a plan that shows the watering of that site to bring it back to a wet meadow for the interest of the biodiversity, at the same time to try to create a mosaic for that the benefit of the birds, invertebrate, mammals and the plant community. It's a pretty rank site at the moment." Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said, "Clearly works have been carried out, but there may be more works that need to be done, and there may be a timing to do that. The meadow will be discussed again in more detail at the next forum on March the 9th.
Villagers launch second battle. Villagers are launching a second battle against development near their homes. Residents in Mitchell Dever Station, north of Winchester, last autumn saw off plans for an anaerobic digester with the help of the County Council. Now it is the council that is their enemy, wanting to develop an asphalt plant only 200 metres down the road. The council has applied to modernise a disused asphalt plant in Mitchell Dever, despite denying planning permission for the nearby digester. More than 70 residents have called for the council to scrap the plans. Peter Bradley, a member of Mitchell Dever Action Group, said he was appalled the council has submitted the plan. "The total and complete ineptness of how the council has just put this forward is just staggering," he said. "It was done with supreme arrogance, as they believe because they currently own the land, they could just reinvigorate it without challenge. That is not so. However, it is not right of us to just object. We would only be able to object once we have been provided with the facts. But their communication has been awful, and so we have no idea when that will be. Last year, Hampshire County Council refused an application for an anaerobic digester waste treatment plant. The MAG, which is an abbreviation of the Mitchell Dever Action Group, was set up to fight the proposal and claimed victory with the application's refusal last October. Resident Phil Bryant lives half a mile away from the plant and is worried about the impact. He said, "I can see the lights from an upstairs bedroom, and that is just one of the issues that concerns us. The height of the fence surrounding the plant is not adequate enough, and it needs to be sorted to cover the lights. For exactly the same reasons that the council didn't want the waste treatment plant in the area, noise, light pollution and so on, they are now saying they want an asphalt plant. The plans were submitted to the county council, making them both the applicant and the decision maker. Mr. Bryant added, "The cynics among us are saying the deal is done and there is nothing we can do." John Botham, chairman of Mitchell Dover Parish Council Planning Committee, was also critical. He said, "The communication from the council has been really quite poor. As the parish council, we didn't know our own information. We did our own information leaflets to let the village understand what was going on." Douglas Patterson, Devas Society chairman, said, "The applicant and the decider are one and the same, and that worries us. Can it be properly scrutinised?" The council confirmed a planning application had been made for an extension of operational capability to support a wider range of highway materials.
Writer's evidence for faith. A Winchester writer has labelled his new book as a game changer in the battle of religion versus science. Dr. John Morris, 79, was at Waterstones at the Brooks Shopping Centre last Friday for the launch of his new novel, Suffering: If God Exists, Why Doesn't He Stop It? The book covers science, gods and their connection in different religions. Written for all faiths, it shares views of atheism, Hinduism, Christianity and others. Dr. Morris said, "The debate is as old as history. Does suffering contradict the existence and love of God? My book replies no, by providing scientific and rational evidence for a realistic faith. I conclude that it's not intellectual suicide to believe that we live in the best possible evolving world, made not by chance, but by a God who suffers alongside our own pain. If I am right, my brief book will help end the debate and will be a game changer." The book is £5.99 and available from Waterstones and Winchester Cathedral's bookshop. All the proceeds from the novel will go to charity equipment for the disabled children.
Concern over tax proposal. Debate raged about plans to increase the council tax precept for Winchester Town Forum. In a heated debate, a proposal to raise the forum's council tax precept by 3.5% this year was put forward by Lib Dem councillor Martin Todd. The increase would cost each Band D household in Winchester Town an extra £2.12 and raise an additional £28,216. Councillor Dominic Hiscott noted that the forum must act to avoid a budget deficit of just over £139,000 by the end of 2020-21. He said, "We can't keep going on as we are. Playgrounds will have to close and we'll have to spend the money left on the ones that are left." The Town Forum last March heard that the £336,000 shortfall for play areas at North Walls, Will Manor Road, Marnell Rise, Gordon Avenue and Takedown Meads. A Conservative councillor, Robert Sanders, said, "If we are stuck for cash, we should not be blowing that money. I know that this is a waste of time arguing this, but I can't endorse a rise in council tax." Also against the plan was Councillor Fiona Mather, who believes savings should be made by not funding the night bus, which costs £13,408. Seven councillors voted in favour of the plan, four voted against and three abstained.
Pair set to pedal C. It's a challenge that would make even the sternest sailors seasick. Two Hampshire men are set to pedal and row across the Atlantic to raise funds for Naomi House, which looks after children with life-limiting illnesses. Anthony Ward-Thomas from Liss and James Ketchell from Basingstoke will do the challenge on a unique boat which resembles a pedalo, and they hope to raise £100,000 for the charity based at Sutton Scotney. They set off from the Canary Islands on this incredible voyage on Sunday, January the 31st, and hope to finally land in Antigua a minimum of 45 days later. The grueling challenge will require the men to row and pedal 24 hours a day in 2-hour rotations. Mr. Ward-Thomas recently visited the hospice along with his daughter, one half of the acclaimed country group Ward-Thomas. Having recently become a father for the fifth time, Anthony felt humbled and incredibly lucky that he has never yet had to call on the help of such a remarkable place as this local children's hospice, but felt compelled to do his bit to help them continue their fantastic work with very poorly children. He said, "We both love the idea of a serious new challenge that hasn't been done before, and we, having raised money for lots of different charities, have come across one that stopped us both in our tracks. The nature and definition of a hospice doesn't come with many crumbs of comfort, but when defined by the age group, has on the surface no upside at all. The great majority of us are family people, and discovering Naimi House has made me realise precisely what we take for granted. It is precisely that we have never experienced such sickness in children. It is precisely never having experienced enforced separation. And it is precisely as a parent, I have never experienced the gut-wrenching sorrow and impotence in the death of a child." And this little article is accompanied by a photograph of Anthony Ward-Thomas and James Ketchell in their unique boat. One of them is rowing, and the other seems to be very much at ease with his legs resting on the side there, watching his chum, I suppose, rowing away. There is a sheltered stern where presumably they can take cover in turn as they row through 24 hours. I can't imagine how weary it's going to be. But at least they give you to row. They're not out on the ocean, because I can see moss of a marina in the background, but I guess it's going to be pretty tough going out in the Atlantic. But at any rate, good luck to them.
Protest at plan to build homes. Villagers in Colden Common and Bishopstoke will march on Saturday, that's tomorrow I suppose, to protest plans which could see nearly 4,000 homes built on their doorstep. Twin campaigns have been launched to resist development which could be launched by Eastleigh Borough Council to meet housing needs. One of eight options being considered would see 3,700 homes built between Bishopstoke, Fair Oak and Colden Common. A main road would be built between Albrook and Fair Oak, raising fears that green space in Stoke Park would also be turned over for development. The Don't Choke Bishopstoke campaign has organised a ramble from the end of Stoke Park Road to the Fox and Hounds pub in Fair Oak for Saturday at 10:30 a.m. Colden Common campaigners have been invited. Chairman David Lovegrove fears the villages would merge and a new road would encourage more countryside development. He said, "The road acts as a catalyst for more housing, because you have sorted the infrastructure. It's a dreadful loss of countryside, which once it's gone forever." Mr. Lovegrove added that even with a bypass, a lot of traffic from new houses would use Bishopstoke Road to get to the centre of Eastleigh, increasing congestion. Another option, building 2,500 homes around the B3037 between Upham and Fair Oak, has also concerned residents. Village meetings to discuss a response were held in Upham and Colden Common on Monday night. Eastleigh Borough Council said it has not decided which option it prefers and wants to hear residents' views. The proposals will make up its local plan for up to 20,000 new homes by 2036. With 10,000 already built, or with planning permission, the council wants to hear from the public on where the remaining homes, between 4,000 and 10,000, should go. The timing of the consultation, which launched just before Christmas and ends on February the 17th, has angered residents who feel that they've been blindsided. The Hampshire Chronicle understands that advance warning of the consultation did appear in the Eastleigh Borough newsletter, delivered to all households late last year, but this was a preview and didn't contain information on exhibitions. Hundreds of Eastleigh Borough residents have attended these events, but campaign organisers in Winchester District villages like Colden Common say awareness is limited. The impact of development on Colden Common and nearby villages such as Oslebury would be huge. Councillor Keith House, leader of Eastleigh Borough Council, has said it needs to meet the demands of the population, provide infrastructure, preserve gaps between committees and plan for housing growth under national planning policy. He added that although extending the plan increases the number of homes, it also gives the opportunity to tackle wider issues like congestion.
Bouncy cathedral to attract children. It was not your average Sunday church experience. Winchester Cathedral hosted a come-and-bounce event, with a bouncy cathedral in the nave. Along with giant games, puppeteering and a picnic area, the cathedral used the day to launch its new Children's Church Sunday School. The idea was conjured up by Animal Boys, Canon Treasurer, during a breakfast meeting, and fellow clergywoman Reverend Sue Wallace said it would hopefully bring in more children to the cathedral. Reverend Wallace said, "Sunday school is such a great thing. We're hoping more children will be a part of it with us for this year." The one-off bouncy cathedral is part of an initiative to encourage more people through the doors at Winchester Cathedral. The inflatable cathedral can be hired for various events, from church fetes to jumble sales. The Reverend Canon Dr. Rowley Ream, Vice Dean of the Cathedral, said, "The new bouncy cathedral will give the message that our cathedral can provide a home for all ages. We take life seriously and we think there's a place in the church for laughter and happiness." Beth Cotterill of Badger Farm said, "It is something that you would never expect to see, a bouncy castle in a cathedral. Nowadays, Sundays are taken up by sport and other activities, so bringing something different will hopefully draw the children in, and with their parents too."
Winchester's newest park and ride opens. Several weeks late, the new park and ride on the southwestern edge of Winchester has opened. Situated near Pitt Roundabout on Romsey Road, it adds another 199 spaces to the overall 1,650 park and ride spaces ringing the southern side of the city. The City Council worked with St Peter's Catholic Primary School to encourage a safer environment for children and neighbours, offering 12 spaces for school use. They had hoped to open it before the Christmas rush. Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for local economy, said, "The park and ride services are a fundamental part of our parking provision to ensure that the vitality and resilience of the local economy is strengthened." He added, "We're driven to improve the quality of our environment, offering customers a convenient and cost-effective way to travel into Winchester." Bovis Homes, which developed Winchester Village housing scheme and funded the new park and ride site, worked closely with the City Council on the design and infrastructure. Critics of park and ride, such as Friends of the Earth, says it only encourages more people to use their cars instead of public transport or cycling.
City tribute to Terry Wogan. Tributes have flooded in to remember Sir Terry Wogan, who died from cancer on Sunday. The TV star was seen in Winchester, where an episode of Terry and Mason's Great Food Trip saw him join Mason McQueen on a gastronomic adventure. He enjoyed tasting the delights at the Hampshire Fair in Abbey Gardens and also tried his first ever sushi at Kyoto Kitchen in Parchment Street, owned by Miff Kayum. Mr. Kayum said, "Meeting him was one of the highlights of my career. We had the privilege of filming with him for a whole afternoon, and what struck me was that for that kind of star, he was so humble and so warm and really calm. He made us feel really comfortable. The charity work that he did was amazing, and he was such a big part of everyone's life. What also struck me was his amazing wit. He was so quick, you're reeling from one of his remarks, and he's already come out with another two. He was a brilliant man and a big loss."
Dumped car's anger. Two dumped cars near Winchester were set to be removed after being ignored for weeks. The inaction over the wrecked vehicles at South Wanston and Cheriton has baffled villagers. Robert Welby Loved of Orchard Close, South Wanston, said the saloon had been in woods off Christmas Hill, South Wanston, for several months. Mr. Welby Loved said, "Why has nothing been done to remove it after such a long time? The other question that ought to be investigated is how the vehicle ended up in this location. Although it's only a matter of yards from both roads, the wrecked car is surrounded by trees and this section of the A34 is in a deep cutting." It was removed on Tuesday. The other abandoned car is a Citroen Saxo on the A272 near the Beauworth Crossroads. A villager at Cheriton, who asked not to be named, said, "The car was left before Christmas and now the windows have been smashed. It's not the sort of thing one expects to see." The City Council spokeswoman said, "Both vehicles have been reported to us and are being dealt with by our neighbourhood services team. The vehicle at Christmas Hill is likely removed either this afternoon, Friday, or at the latest on Monday. The vehicle on Petersfield Road has only just been reported. Once notice has been served, the owner has 3 days to get in contact." Meanwhile, Jill Thorne has sent in a photo of guttering dumped in Littleton Lane. She said, "It's unforgivable. We live in a beautiful part of England. This is an eyesore."
Girl dyes hair in donor plea. A schoolgirl with cancer has dyed her hair blue as she bids to get more people registered as stem cell donors. Zara Sheikh, 13, of Nightingale Close, Winchester, was diagnosed with leukemia in November 2014. She went into remission late last year, but has now been told by doctors that the disease has returned. The King's School pupil will be going back for chemotherapy today and said she always wanted to dye her hair and this is the perfect time to do it, as she will lose her hair during the treatment. Her friends and family got into contact with Guy Kramer, hairdressers on Parchment Street, and the renowned salon accommodated Zara for free. A spokesperson for Guy Kramer said that they were happy to help and wished Zara the best of luck. A spokesperson for Delete Blood Cancer UK said, "We wish all the best to Zara." And this is accompanied by a photograph showing Zara with her mother, Carenza, and her sister outside the Guy Kramer salon in Parchment Street. Looking quite happy, but I imagine she is facing a horrible ordeal. We wish her well.
Chance to see otters. They come and go and are rarely seen by the public, but otters are regularly using the River Itchen as a way through Winchester city centre. Their route goes under the city mill, where the National Trust has been photographing them with infrared cameras for years. But now the mill has introduced software that instantly uploads the photos to its Twitter feed. Mill manager Rick Weeks said, The Otter Cam project began as a joint project between the National Trust and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Working with support from IBM and the University of Exeter, a monitoring programme has been developed over the past 18 months to process the footage recorded by the cameras and to automatically identify otter sites and then post these as tweets for the public to enjoy. Mr. Weeks added, there are only three or four urban environments which have got otters on a daily basis, which makes this pretty special. The software can filter out from uploading any non-otters, such as spiders, rats and ducks. Mr. Weeks estimates there are about five or six otters regularly going under the mill, including a dominant dog otter, female mates and young cubs. Nearly extinct 20 years ago, the otters have made a strong comeback and repopulated the Itchen and moved onto the River Test and their subsidiary streams.
Now, you may be aware that there is a Belgarum column in the Hampshire Chronicle at times, and it's called An Alternative Look at the News. And this one is headed, Gertrude Does Her Worst. There is a small amount of irony in this piece. It battered the country and caused flooding in parts... excuse me. It battered the country and caused flooding in parts of northern England. Storm Gertrude swept over the country last week. But how did Winchester cope? The city was left in disarray as bins were blown over and leaves were scattered across the high street. Carnage can barely describe the devastation. In comparison, a lorry was blown over on the M48 motorway near Bristol and the Severn Bridge. Nevertheless, the city coped with the storm and all the bins were put upright. The black ones seemed to cope better than the red ones. You can see that in the photograph accompanying this. In the past, City Councillor Ian Tate raised issue by the number of bins, especially ones used by the trade, that were clogging up the city streets. Some businesses even had 10 or more blocking pavements, and streets added to the concern that the city would become overrun. One restaurant, Zizzy, had been one of the businesses that was occupying too much space with bins, said Mr. Tate. In 2011, Councillor Bell told the City Council that the Zizzy situation had, ironically, been worsened by the business's efforts to recycle more. She said Zizzy, based at the former Hampshire Chronicle offices in the High Street, also had limited space.
The Chief Constable leaves. The safety of residents in Hampshire lies in the hands of a temporary police chief as Chief Constable Andy Marsh leaves the force. As reported, Mr. Marsh quit Hampshire Constabulary after being chosen to fill the same job in Avon and Somerset, where his family lives. For almost 3 years, he's held the post after impressing the Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes, his panel of councillors, and elected members. In an unusual twist, thought to be a first for a force in England and Wales, he will be in charge of his wife, Nikki Watson, who currently holds the position of Assistant Chief Constable. This has raised questions of his position being compromised, but his new police commissioner, Sue Mountstevens, has said measures will ensure he is not her line manager. Since his appointment as Chief Constable in 2013, Mr. Marsh has led his officers and staff through a precarious financial struggle, which saw tens of millions of pounds saved as police stations were closed, made affine or offline numbers slashed, I think it must be offline, slashed, and buildings sold off to save cash.
Collaboration of services praised. Police and fire merger not ruled out. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, has not ruled out a takeover of responsibility for the Hampshire Fire Service. This is one of the issues that could be considered for emergency services across the country under new legislation designed to get police and fire services working closer together. It was the focus of a visit last week by a senior government minister to Hampshire's police and fire headquarters in Eastleigh to see how collaboration between the two emergency services worked on the ground. Minister for Policing, Fire, Criminal Justice and Victims, Mike Penning, praised the innovative approach in Hampshire, one of only two forces in the country with a joint headquarters, which he said would allow services to find savings but also be more effective. About 100 police staff moved into the fire headquarters in Lee Road in November, which is now police's strategic headquarters, in a move expected to save both forces about £600,000 a year. The visit follows an announcement by the government on new legislation it is bringing forward, under which PCCs would be able to make the case for taking responsibility for their local fire and rescue service. It means PCCs could potentially create a single employer for both police and fire personnel. It would also mean fire and police services have a duty to work together. PCC Simon Hayes said the two forces would be looking at further collaboration in future, but said the legislation was designed to bring other forces into line with what had already been achieved in Hampshire. But he did not rule out the idea of a PCC overseeing both services. Deputy Chief Officer for Hampshire, Neil Odin, said although there were no plans at this stage to merge responsibility for police and fire under the PCC, he could not rule it out. He said collaboration between the two forces was already strong, sharing back staff and buildings, so there was no reason to do this because of the progress already made in Hampshire, but said he was not concerned by the prospect.
City's jail highest for suicides in the region. Winchester had the highest regional figure for deaths in custody in 2015, according to the new Ministry of Justice data. There were seven deaths, with four suicides at the Romsey Road Jail, report the campaigning charity Howard League for Penal Reforms. The League said the numbers were alarmingly high.
Car park closes. The open-air car park in Chesil Street will close on Monday as work begins on a £15 million care facility. The facility's 83 bays will make way for 52 extra care flats for the elderly, with work due to finish by autumn 2017. Meanwhile, 20 bays in Chesil Street's multi-storey have been reserved for Zone X residents affected by the temporary loss of on-street bays. Residents in Zones X and W are entitled to free overnight parking in the multi-storey from 6 p.m. until 8 a.m. All on-street and multi-storey bays will be open until the end of next week, a City Council spokesman said.
Hundreds perform in peace concert. Hundreds of young musicians from German and Hampshire schools combined for a peace concert. Entitled A Celebration of Peace, it was held in the cathedral and involved the young musicians in work of great complexity. Hampshire County Youth Orchestra played with a choir from the city of Giessen, Winchester's German twin town. Jonathan Glenn, chairman of Hampshire County Council, warmly welcomed guests, pupils and staff, who, he said, have travelled all the way from Giessen. There has been a close link between this school and Hampshire's music service for over 20 years. Regular concerts and events have taken place both here and in Germany over the years, but I'm told nothing as ambitious as this. Mr. Glenn also said that he had chosen freedom and democracy as his theme for the year. Hampshire's Youth Orchestra trumpets played Benjamin Britten's fanfare for St. Edmundsbury. Giessen's choir, with the Youth Orchestra's wind and brass conducted by Carl Clausen, rendered Brahms' funeral anthem. John McCrae's 1915 poem, In Flanders Fields, was chosen and read by Melanie Saunders, County Manager for Educational Improvement. The musicians also played a world premiere, The Lost Wand, by Francis Pott. The quality of the music was also underlined by the Hampshire Orchestra, leader Helena Mole, playing Shostakovich's Symphony No. 5. There were also acclaimed performances by the Giessen Choir of Mozart's Ave Verum and a delightful Ode to Joy by Beethoven. Dr. Jörg Abel conducted a massed choir of Liebigschule, Henry Beaufort, King's, Perrin School, Wyvern and Barton Peveril Colleges with Hampshire County Youth Orchestra. The Hampshire County Youth Orchestra will travel to Germany in the next few weeks for a repeat performance of this event.
On that very positive item, we conclude our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thank you, of course, to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.